The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, what's the similarity between Man United in the Champions League and Jude Law? Answer, they both get slung out after scoring twice with Nani. Football Weekly salutes typical Germans Bayern Munich and ponders a row of semis with no English in them. Sounds like a line from a Morrissey song. After Messi cleans up at the Nou Camp, we dial up Sid Lowe to hear him bang on about the stumpy Argentine genius, tell us what they're making of it all in Spain, and what awaits when Leo and Cristiano Ronaldo collide in Saturday's Clásico. There's a packed weekend ahead in provincial footballing backwater England too, with both Premier League and FA Cup action on the way. We preview the action, hear your posts, all that and much, much more in Football Weekly Extra. Hello, everybody. On board today in Team Pod, Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Got Barry written down here. It's not Barry. It's Paolo Bandini.
Sorry to disappoint.
No. Delighted to see you, Paolo. Fresh back from the Nou Camp.
I actually got back yesterday. I had a shift yesterday. I had to come back on the overnight. But
Fascinating. Matt Scott, good to have you back as well.
Gotcha.
All right, then. And first things first, Shawnee, you owe Happy Garth £20 for betting him that Inter wouldn't go further than the English clubs in the Champions League. He, controversially, requests you donate it to the Labour Party. Are you going to do that, Sean, are you?
Absolutely. I'll give it to him wherever he wants me to give it.
Raised eyebrows at that remark.
No, well done, Happy Garth. You know, you got it right, I got it wrong. Right. So, well done.
All right, excellent. No English teams in the semi-finals of the Champions League after the last five tournaments have featured at least one English finalist. Well, one English finalist. There you go. Why? And does it matter? Is it just a bleep? All questions which we may or may not tackle in the next 5 minutes or so. Matt, a lot of people are asking about whether this is a symptom of the debts of English clubs or hubris, perhaps the fact that the Big Four didn't make any major moves last summer on the transfer market.
I think it's probably more to do with the latter. I mean, any club that loses Cristiano Ronaldo is necessarily going to be diminished. Any league that loses him will be as well. But I think the situation about the debt is probably slightly overplayed, because it's not the matter of the debt itself, it's the fact that the debts are now being reined in. I mean, if you look at Chelsea, they too went out in the second round, didn't get as far as the quarterfinals, and what happened there was because the benefactor had turned the tap off. He's actually written off the debts, the shareholder loans he had in there, Roman Abramovich.
So the current situation, rather than the last 3-4 years of having sort of three teams out of the four in the semi-finals, is going to be a more likely scenario going further forward.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think this time could endure, because the clubs, you know, unless the clubs do invest, it's not so surprising that Bayern Munich should be in the last four of the Champions League. They are one of the five richest clubs in Europe and therefore the world. Likewise, you know, Barcelona, they retain every single penny that they earn from the media rights that they generate, whereas in this country there is far more collectivism and distribution. Let's not forget, I mean, Rafa Benitez this morning in the papers is moaning again about how little money he has to spend, talking about how Barcelona have got so much money and that's the way to do it. Well, he should know better than most as a Spaniard that the money that Barcelona get is all theirs and none of it is given out anywhere else. And players in the second division in Spain are threatening to go on... Well, the entire Spanish league is threatening to go on strike because players in the second division have not been paid for a year. Now, if that's the right model to approach, then go and enjoy it in Spain, Rafa, because I don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
I do think we have to be slightly careful there's not an overreaction here. I mean, and I remember being in this pod after it didn't qualify for Euro 2008, and the sort of general consensus was, you know, the game was going to the dogs and we should all run for the hills. I mean, I think we all can agree the Big Four is weaker this year. They've lost 23 games in the Premier League already this season compared to 17 last season and 15 the year before that. We also know, I guess, with the 50% tax rate and the weakness of the pound against the euro, it means the, you know, UK is less attractive.
I mean, no, I disagree with that.
Really?
Where are they going to go?
Well, they go to Spain. They can,
where players don't get paid.
But they do if they go to Barcelona or Real Madrid. But anyway,
there's only two clubs, and they're not. I mean, they're not going to be. Well, Real Madrid will continue to spend money, but I don't see Barcelona changing much.
Was it not English clubs' choice that the big names didn't come to the Premier League last summer, rather than them
Absolutely.
Being turned down?
I bet you, if Wenger had enough money and Wesley Snyder was about, he would have been interested. I bet you, Chelsea perhaps could have.
Wenger, does he have enough money or not?
He's got plenty of money. He's just slightly too conceited.
We're ganging up on you, sure.
But no, but different people say a lot of different things about Arsenal, how much they really have to spend.
Some people know what they're talking about and others don't.
Game on. In the Football Weekly Extra
other Guardian columnists that also know a bit about Arsenal are convinced that Wenger is playing a lot of... playing a very good hand with limited resources.
Right.
I disagree with him.
Couple of other points on this. One, producer Pete would like to point out the whole notion of English dominance in the Champions League is a bit of a myth anyway. If you look at the competition since its inception, Spain has had 5 winners, Italy 4, England only 3. And all the dominance the last few years, you've only had 2 English winners, Man United in the All-English Final. And,
But if you go from 2004 onwards, the number of clubs
only
that have made the semis and the final has been far higher. So it's been a cycle where English clubs have been on top.
Other people have been accusing Michel Platini of engineering the Premier League's downfall with his new measures. But to Dirk, with an interesting post, points out it wasn't Platini's fault. It's actually Real Madrid's. Basically, they weakened the Big Four by taking key players from the English teams. And then they improved big teams in other countries by shedding Wesley Snyder and Arwen Robben, who then put the English clubs out, as well as Real inflating the transfer prices beyond the reach or the desire to compete of Premier Leagues.
Well, just on that point about Real Madrid, just very quickly, was that not fueled by debt? Everybody thinks so. Yeah. You know, actually, the money that Real Madrid have spent is come from Santander. I, as a Santander shareholder, am absolutely up in arms about this. I'm outraged because, they're funding all of that money, all of that spending, and whoever our correspondent was is quite right. It's ruined European football.
Is there some kind of scarf you could wear in protest, do you think?
I don't know. Yes, that's a very good idea. Yeah, the Abbey National scarf.
The old Abbey National scarf. All right, let's launch a campaign. Is it, though, before we come on specifically to the games, barely scratch the surface of this topic, is it good news for England and the World Cup chances? You know, not having teams in the World Cup in the Champions League final on May the 22nd.
I'm not sure that's going to make such a huge difference. I mean, I think if you're talking about the teams all getting knocked out in the group stages, so they weren't playing many games, then maybe. But you're looking at a maximum of 3 games. And
fewer games to play, reduced chance of injury, not having players having to leave the training camp for the game on the 22nd. He can have them all from May the 11th.
It didn't seem to hurt Chelsea, did it, when they had the week off before Manchester United? I think that actually the opportunity to recharge the batteries. Playing Saturday, Wednesday, Ferguson has always said it, and so too Wenger. It's blooming hard work, and it's very difficult to keep players fit throughout that. And also the risk of injury if you want to keep using somebody like Wayne Rooney.
Well, that's the bigger issue, isn't it? Is really, out of the two teams, the player that England are by far the most concerned about is Wayne Rooney. And so yes, if they played an extra couple of games and Ferguson kept playing him when he, as yesterday, manifestly wasn't 100%.
Then... No, he was. He gave a thumbs up. I saw it.
Yeah.
Mm. On a general note, they were 1-0 up in the first leg away. They were 3-0 up in the second leg at home. How did Man United go out?
It was a strange one because Bayern looked so poor in the first half. You know, Di Michaelis and Van Buyten were so slow. They made Kieran and Adams look like Ben Johnson and Carl Lewis in their prime. But United just tore them, an a-hole. And if I can say that, I probably can't.
You said it, sure.
But once the goal... Olic's goal went in, and once Raphael was sent off, United, you could see them sort of they shrank. They went and Ferguson's decisions after that were quite strange. He brought a show on for Rooney, which puzzled me a little bit because you'd have thought they'd have wanted Berbatov to hold the ball up, and he only gave Berbatov 13 minutes, which I think shows that he clearly has no trust in him.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the case. I think that particularly after he had such a scintillating display against Chelsea in midfield, football is played as much psychologically as it is with feet. And it was interesting that Arsenal should claw their way back in a game that they were so utterly outplayed against Barcelona in the first leg. And that's because if you just start to lose a little bit of elan and something changes in the game. For Arsenal, it was Theo Walcott coming on. For Van Gaal's men, it was the goal shortly before half time and then the sending off of Raphael afterwards. The entire balance of the psychology went back in favour of Bayern Munich, and obviously Van Gaal had played on that very, very well at half time because he was saying you're only 2 goals away from winning this tie, just go out and play.
Well, only one goal.
You're only 1 goal away from winning this tie.
That's what I found so interesting was that for years, one of the key things about English teams and what's impressed the rest of the continent so much about them has been their mental resilience, has been their spirit. Note here that Man United really are a one-man team, that man being Raphael, of course, because as soon as he went off, bish.
Because I was thinking about it. It was like having had Wayne Rooney sent off because, you know, 10 minutes after Raphael's departure, they were down to 10 men and the person who had been sacrificed was Wayne Rooney for his injury. So it was like
was
losing him after 55 minutes, exactly what England had against Portugal all those time ago. And it deflates teams completely. It's about the psychological impact.
But you can talk about the English teams. I mean, I think it's also been traditionally a German team trait to have this resilience. And I think if you look at what happened against Fiorentina as well, I mean, it's almost, you know, it's not at all dissimilar story. You know, they were 2-0 down and then 3-1 down, and, you know, in many ways not being outplayed. And I think, you know, the same thing last night when I was watching the first half and it was when it went 3-0. The first thing that came into, well, not first thing, but one of the things that came to my mind was that obviously the win against Roma a few years back where they swept them away 7-1 at that point, it looked like United could. But, you know, this is exactly something we touched on a few weeks ago. I think sometimes in those situations, Italian teams tend to run up the flag and say, oh, well, this one's a lost cause. We might as well just wait for, you know, sack it in and get ready for the next game. Whereas, you know, Bayern Munich, credit to them, you know, even before the sending off, they had enough about them to get that goal before half time.
Speaking of traditional German attributes, interesting comments from Ferguson at the end. The young boy showed a bit of inexperience, he said, in a plaintive lament for Raphael. But they got him sent off. Everyone sprinted towards the referee. Typical Germans. You cannot dispute that. They are like that. Roy A1 posting in saying, is John Terry German? Other comments. Bill O'Hearn. Yes, surely this was...
We're all pretty much Germans, aren't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot of us are.
I think
the Queen's
in a John
German.
F. Kennedy sense, is this or what?
Well, no. Are you related to the Queen, Sean?
No, but in the sense that in a lot of people, we're Anglo-Saxons originally.
Right. All men have red hair. Absolutely. Right.
Well,
okay.
The more immediate response to the Ferguson comment is Frank Ribéry.
Paolo Baldini, are you a German?
Well, not to my knowledge. But I don't think Frank Ribéry is either. And no. He seemed to be one of the main protagonists in that.
Well, indeed. Bill O'Hearn, surely the final nail in the coffin for Dimitar Berbatov's United career, seeing a second choice to a one-legged Rooney, very much the point you were making there, Matt.
First of all, absolutely condemn the comments from Alex Ferguson about...
Typical Scotsman, really, to come up with a reaction.
Brilliant. But for him to be saying that was clearly to deflect the attention away from things. And I think that he is perhaps at fault along the lines here. When he replaced Rooney, it was with John O'Shea. Now, it was clear that the momentum lay with Bayern Munich at the time. Had he brought on Berbatov, however little he trusts him, and not played Nani through the middle, which clearly is not his position, in an attempt purely to shore up the advantage as it stood, then, frankly, he was laying himself and his team bare to exactly what happened last night. And here we are this morning with Manchester United out of the Champions League.
Brilliant goal from Nani, that off the cross.
Robin's goal?
Robin's weren't too bad, was it?
Yeah, true.
Just to finish this one off by saying, we fancy Bayern against the rather lacklustre Lyon, do
we? I think that's, you know, a lot of people seem to make the assumption, certainly the bookies have got it that way around, but for me, Bordeaux beat Bayern twice in the group stages. I know that's a long time ago, but I think the issue with Bayern is they're manifestly bad at the back. I mean, clearly, if you can get at them, you can score goals. My concern with Lyon is the way they approached the game in Bordeaux last night was simply to sort of, you know, cling on to what they got. And so it's going to be all about the way they attack the games against Bayern, isn't it, really? Whether they're willing to go for it.
Nice summary there. Thanks, Paolo. Saves us talking about that later on. What we should now talk about are those events which you witnessed firsthand, Paolo, at the Nou Camp, Barcelona, Leo Messi, all that. And we have Sid Lowe standing by to discuss that with us right after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Paolo, so then, Nou Camp memories.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was the first time I've been to actually watch a game at the Camp Nou. I've been there on the tour, but it's the first time I've seen a game there. And from the position where they actually give to the away fans, right up at the very, very back of the highest part of the stands, what I saw was several dots moving around a green field, and one particularly talented dot manoeuvring with ease through the other set of dots.
That's PlayStation football.
Yeah, that's PlayStation. I mean, that's more like a Sega Mega Drive football right there.
It's sensible soccer football.
Lots
of people posting in with quite derogatory remarks about Wenger, DG of Herne Hill, for example, saying it's obvious that to stop Messi, you have to stop the supply. The point is, given how rich Arsenal are, and throughout Wenger's reign, he hasn't bought a Mascherano type, not even a Park type. Whose fault is that, and why wasn't Walcott put on the left to exploit the space behind Dani Alves?
I think we need to say one thing. Sorry, just that first point is that Alex Song is the man who should have been cutting Spider-Man. Now, admittedly, in the first leg, he didn't do a great job of it.
Right.
Had he been fit, he would have been the man assigned to do that disrupting of the supply. That's the one player who is in the Arsenal squad who should be doing that.
Right. Pupkin, meanwhile, says Arsenal proved themselves devoid of ideas, tactically inept, unable to close down, tackle pass, or even compete with a Barca team who stopped playing after 50 minutes. The experiment is over, methinks. Now, I thought it was quite a brave showing by a group of reserves.
My take on it was, I actually thought, having seen both of them, and admittedly, as I say, my vantage point wasn't the best at the Camp Nou, I thought Arsenal were better in the second leg than they were for the significant part of the first leg. I also thought that, you know, you can spin this any way you want, but, you know, I thought they started brightly enough, and I think that there was one opportunity where Abu Diaby missed it a pass in between the Arsenal goal and Barcelona goal, and you think, well, what if, you know, if they'd scored a second goal? But at the same time, Lionel Messi was in absolutely incredible form. You're looking at a very weakened Arsenal side that's missing players in midfield, that's missing players in defence. I mean, you know, start Mikel Silvestre against a team like that, and, you know, you're going to get what you're going to get. Ultimately, you've just got to put your hands up and say Leo Messi was brilliant.
He was, but thankfully, most people seem to be coming round to the idea that Messi is a truly great player. But there's still one or two out there that are saying he's got to win a World Cup to be great, which is surely poppycock. I mean, if he wins the Champions League three times in
first
a row...
A-hole, now poppycock.
No, really, poppycock's fine. If he wins three Champions Leagues in a row, you know, like, you know, Cruyff in the 70s, does that not mean he's going to be one of the great players? Of course it does. And I think the Champions League now is at a higher level than the World Cup, while 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't.
Right. All right, well, let's find out if Sid Lowe is finally coming around to the idea that Leo Messi's a good player. Sid, are you there?
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, Sid. You've been listening in. You've been eavesdropping on our conversation there.
I have. Right. I'm filthy pervert, yeah.
Yeah. Now,
so a couple of weeks ago, we had a bizarre phone conversation where you asked me what I was wearing, and now I've been listening in on you. There's something wrong with us.
Yeah. What are you wearing, Sid? Just out of the shower?
Yeah, just out of the shower. I'm just drying myself slowly.
Oh, please.
Excellent. Now, why have you been talking about Messi again?
Absolutely, yes. He's quite exciting, isn't he? Let's be fair.
He is. Now, listen, 48 hours on from the game, how great do you think that performance was?
Well, I mean, it was brilliant, obviously. There's no two ways about that. But I think that one of the striking things about it was that, in a way, it wasn't particularly unusual from him. Yes, it was in that he got four goals. He's never done that before. Yes, it was, and it was a huge, huge stage against Arsenal. And you know, in that sense, this has gone around the world, and it has made lots of people turn towards him, including the Madrid press, which is something that obviously doesn't normally happen. But I think one of the amazing things about Messi is how consistently excellent he is. And I think he's done something that perhaps people don't always recognise with him, which is that even when he doesn't play well in speech marks, he plays very well. He's capable of just playing the game. If it's not working for him in terms of running at people and doing spectacular things, he's capable of just controlling the ball and keeping it moving and playing game. And the stat that I brought up yesterday was, in the first leg at the Emirates, he completed more passes than any Arsenal player. If he'd just been a midfielder playing the ball around, we said, he's quite useful.
Can somebody explain? I mean, I've only really ever seen him play, once for Argentina against Uruguay in the playoff, and he was utterly anonymised. And I did wonder whether or not it was his manager, or whether or not it's the burden of wearing that shirt, or what. I mean, when we go into the World Cup, are we actually going to see an unfettered Messi as we saw the other night, to whom the ball is always played by his teammates, as it was on Tuesday night for Barcelona? Or are we going to see the same player as I saw in that very late night match against Uruguay? What do you think, Sid?
Well, that's the thing that everybody's asking, of course, and that's the real risk. I think that we're in this very bizarre situation that the one person who can stop Leo Messi being as great as Diego Maradona is Diego Maradona himself. And I don't want to be entirely cynical, but you do sometimes wonder if there's underpinning it a little element of that. Although Maradona's not stupid. Christ almighty, he wants Leo Messi to be brilliant at the World Cup. Surely he does, because then he would be the coach that wins the World Cup for them. There's lots of things that make a big difference, I think, between the Argentinian national team and the Barcelona team. And the bottom line is that Barcelona are better. They play a style of football a structure, a formation that suits Messi in a way that Argentina don't. Also, the suggestion that Messi hasn't been brilliant for Argentina isn't entirely true. He was fantastic for them in the Copa America until they were eventually beaten by Brazil in the final. He won an Olympic gold medal with them. It's this qualifying campaign under Diego Maradona where he's been pretty poor. But then you show me one player in the Argentina side over this qualifying campaign who's been any good at all. Maradona used, I think I'm right in saying this, 120 players. So there's not exactly stability going on. And the hope, obviously, from all the Argentinians that I speak to is that with time and with the World Cup, this will come good. Bear in mind that I must admit, I don't know what Maradona did in qualification for the 1986 World Cup, but all of that is irrelevant now. If Messi can have a great World Cup, then all of this will be irrelevant as well.
Next question. Is Florentino Perez taking a vacation on the 22nd of May?
This is hilarious, isn't it? And I was watching last night, watching Bayern Munich, and thinking, God, if only there was a German word for laughing at other people's misfortune.
Brilliant, Sid. That's the funniest thing you ever said.
you've got a Champions League final in which Barcelona might get there. If they don't, then Bayern Munich, led by Arjen Robben, will. And there's a good chance as well, of course, that Inter Milan, led by Wesley Sneijder, will. If I was Florentino Perez, and looking at the way that he normally signs players, I'd be looking around the Champions League and going, bloody hell, that Arjen Robben and that Wesley Sneijder, they're pretty good. Maybe I'll sign them in the summer.
Now, back to Messi, and two clubs will be trying to stop him in the near future. One is Inter, who Barcelona. Well, I'm just curious to know what the Spanish press, have they dedicated any thoughts to the next stage for Barcelona?
Yeah, of course they have. And there is concern about the way that Inter will set up. Certainly they believe that Jose Mourinho will be far more defensive, far more aggressive. And one of the headlines on the front of Marca the other day in small at the top was that Jose Mourinho has become the great white hope, because of course they're desperate, and Florentino and Real Madrid fans are in particular, desperate not to see Barcelona in the Champions League final. And even if that means supporting Wesley Sneijder, they'll do it. The other thing with Mourinho is that there's a belief, as I say, that the approach will be different. And I think there's a slight turn in the last couple of days. This might be a little unfair to read this much into it, but I think that basically in the last 2 days, what Marca as a newspaper are advocating is for people to start kicking lumps out of Leo Messi.
Starting with Real Madrid in the Clásico this Saturday?
Well, this is exactly the point. Their editor yesterday was talking about, and it's a phrase that Luis Aragonés once made up, about how you've got to stop teams either by civil means or criminal means. And Marca's editor made that phrase his own a couple of days ago.
Hence his comments about Thierry Henry.
Yeah. Today, the front page headline is Risto Stoichkov saying they're going to kick him all over the place. Now, admittedly, that's a quote from Stoichkov, and so therefore it's worthy of being on the front page. But you get the feeling it's not just a quote, it's also a piece of advice from Marca to Real Madrid. So I do think that there is at least a trend of opinion in parts of the Madrid media that are saying, you know what, if we're going to have to stop him by kicking him, sod it, let's do it.
All right. Can I be a bit of a gooner about Barcelona, incidentally? I thought that for a team, while we do gush praise all over them and how wonderful they have played, and rightly, because they were very, very good, I thought that there was a degree of very disappointing cynicism from them. I mean, if Alex Ferguson has a go at players for crowding the referee over the booking for Rafael, then I think that it's legitimate for us to raise the situation that Barcelona in both legs, where players were writhing all over the place over the merest of contact, and I personally think both referees were somewhat duped in that, but that could well be the gooner in me talking.
Well, I think what I'd say, let's give you the Barcelona angle. The Barcelona angle would come from the other side and say that when Arsenal knew they couldn't play, they started kicking. And they certainly believe that Song did that in the first leg, which I think there's an element of truth in that. And this, I suppose, in a way, is that kind of slightly grey area between Spanish-style referees and English-style referees when you get in the Champions League. And you have referees that end up not entirely pleasing either side of the debate. And yeah, it is true, of course, that Barcelona are more than capable of doing that on occasions. I would single out certain players rather than the entire Barcelona side, because I think apart from one role from Messi where he was hit pretty hard, one of the striking things about Messi is he gets knocked down and he does just kind of get up and carry on with the game more often than not. In fact, virtually all the time. I was quite surprised to see him go down for so long the other night. But if you look at certainly Sergio Busquets...
Busquets was disgraceful.
...very adept at it, and Busquets does that, I think, all the time.
Biggest game of the season anyway this Saturday, and it was 6-2 to Barca last time around. What's your prediction this time?
I really don't know. I mean, last time I wouldn't have predicted 6-2. I think there's no doubt that, you know, Real Madrid came into it off the back of, I think it was 16 wins in 17, but Barca were playing better football. And we all felt that if Barcelona got it right, they would beat Madrid. I think the same is true this time around, but I can see Madrid being openly defensive about the way they play. I can see them trying to play on the break. I can see them being quite aggressive. And I can see them getting away with it. But it just... I don't know. Predictions are just so hard on this game, partly because we haven't really seen enough of Real Madrid in genuinely difficult circumstances.
Interesting. Sid, that's brilliant. Look forward to speaking to you on Monday to get your reaction to that and much, much more besides.
Yeah, hope so. Speak to you then.
Very good. Now, Inter coming up next for Barcelona, and of course beaten 2-0 in November by Barcelona, a Barcelona side that didn't include Ibrahimovic, as we mentioned on Monday, but didn't include Messi either. And interestingly, the Italians, the Gazzetta today, mentioning one of their big hopes for Inter is the fact that Ibrahimovic might play and stuff it up the way we did at the San Siro. Mourinho, of course, our story has changed. We got a new mentality since that day in November.
I think it's true. I think Inter are playing better in Europe than they were at that point of the season. I thought it was interesting, just following what Sid said, I saw a quote from Mourinho where he basically said, I'd sign up right now for 0-0 in the home leg. So clearly he basically believes that if they can stop Barca from scoring in the home leg, then they can get an away goal. And actually, it has to be said now as well, that home leg now, when you look at what happened to Arsenal in both legs, it is quite impressive that Inter were able to stop Barca from scoring in the first leg, even if they
Messi
did
Messi didn't play in that either.
Well, I think there are other good players in that team, but it's true.
Well, they beat CSKA, or CSKA, or however it's meant to be.
Yeah, that's come into modern parlance, isn't it? Where does that come from?
I'm not sure. They beat that Russian lot, anyway, on... when was that? Tuesday. I'm getting bewildered now by this run of games. And that makes it 5 wins in a row. So there has definitely been a change in Inter's fortunes. They have a huge game coming up this weekend themselves, away to Fiorentina, who are mounting a bit of a late charge, possibly for a Champions League place.
I don't know about a charge. I think they've picked up a couple of wins and a loss and a draw.
No, all right then. But anyway, it's a big game, Paolo.
It is a big game. Well, Fiorentina have shown this season that often they've played their best football in the bigger games. Unfortunately for them, not just in Europe, but in a lot of those big games, they've had some fairly scandalous decisions go against them that have cost them.
Scandalous refereeing decisions, which brings me on to my next topic. Calciopoli, the return thereof. And we were talking about this on Monday, just to briefly sum up here, because a couple of people are posting in the morning dump, nice name that one, I want curly hair too, asking before the Calciopoli scandal broke if there were many cases of blatant wrong decisions, and uproar among fans and media. The answer is there were huge things. For years and years and years, there was outrage about this or that, and fights in Parliament even over refereeing decisions.
Well, there always was and there always were, and Italy has always been a bit like that. And the problem is that just because everyone is accusing everyone of conspiracy over this the whole time, you start to become sensitized to it and go, well, everyone's just being ridiculous. And then, Calciopoli emerges and it turns out there was a big conspiracy going on. And it's interesting the stuff that's come out. I know you touched on it on Monday. Obviously, they're now trying to finger Inter as well, say that they were, as bad. Well, Moggi's case's argument is that they're as bad as everyone else. I mean, I don't think that the taps that have come out so far have been as bad as some of the stuff that was on Moggi. So I think there'll have to be
the
more
taps,
to come.
Just to sum up, the taps that have come out so far are kind of the level you'd expect from Premier League clubs talking to Keith Hackett about a referee, the kind of contacts that I imagine go on all over the world. Whereas what Moggi was up to, locking a referee in a toilet and leaving for the airport with the key in his pocket, and much, much more, and threatening people and his son as well. This is all stuff that's been, there's criminal investigations of threatening players that their careers are going to go in the wrong way if they don't sign up with his son's agency. All sorts of stuff like that. Yeah. It's just on another level. However, next Tuesday, I thought it was this Tuesday, but it's next Tuesday, the Italian League are going to reveal what else they've found and if they're going to have an inquiry. There you go. Championship? Matt Scott, worried poster Toon, says, can I just say well done to Chris Hooton for a tremendous job, which should be by no means underestimated. I thought he might be a Rodomark too, but I'd like to see him given a crack at the job in the Premier League, but as long as Mike Ashley spends some money. Now, early signs, are they not very positive of Newcastle furnishing Chris Hooton with a big, transfer chest, war chest thing?
Well, it's required £30 million of support just to keep it going in the Championship this year. I mean, I doubt that he's going to be delving his hand into his pocket like that, because he's not a committed owner, if we're to believe the fact that he had put it on sale. I mean, why would he continue to do it. I mean, that just seemed to me as though he was sustaining value of the asset rather than because the loss would have been greater if he hadn't put that £30 million in.
Without that, do you think they can they compete?
Without more investment. Mm. Well, I think we should applaud not only Chris Hughton, but Mike Ashley for doing that, because he didn't, you know, he'd bought Kevin Nolan, who's proved to be a very, very influential player in the Championship and certainly a better player than Bolton and Bolton Wanderers and Newcastle in the Championship. To my mind, I think he deserves better than that. With no disrespect to Bolton Wanderers fans, but he certainly should be playing European football. And I think that he, you know, that ability to call on those players is made the difference in the Championship for Chris Hughton. When he is competing against other clubs, he's fallen short as a manager in the past.
Other clubs on a similar level, you say?
That's what I mean, yeah. Right. Forgive me, yeah.
No problem. So it's very much a qualified, well done.
Yeah, and I mean, Mike Ashley, you know, he's coming for a hell of a lot of stick from Newcastle United fans. All of that's a matter of record. But I think it's time to recognise for whatever, his motivation was purely not to lose £400 million of previous investment, £300 million of previous investment. So he's put in another £20-30 million this time round. But whatever his motivation, it has put them straight back up into the top division. And at the first time of asking, and he's only got to look at what's happened to Norwich, Southampton, Charlton, Leeds United, Manchester City when years ago. You know, it can go very much the other way, so fair play to him.
Well, still to come in today's Football Weekly Extra, we'll have a couple of posts from lucky listeners, and we'll look forward to an exciting weekend of FA Cup semi-finals. Posts. I'm indebted to Dirk, who, ahead of the second leg at the Nou Camp, asked, what is all this optimistic talk about Arsenal beating Barcelona? Can anyone name 9 more unlikely things more likely to happen than Arsenal beating Barcelona? Immediate response here from Doug the Head. 1, Sid having a conversation without saying, hang on a minute. 2, John Ashdown coming into the pod without alphabet dating being mentioned. 3, Paul Daw not sticking up for France. Raphael Honigstein not saying excuse the pun, or pun intended. Fernando Duarte not sounding like a Brazilian pimp. Sean Ingle failing to mention the betting on a key upcoming game. Barry turning up to the pod in a France shirt with Henri on the back and a string of onions around his neck. Simon Hattonston ever being invited back into the pod, etc. Dirk himself contributed Katie Lang having a baby with Ricky Martin, the father. Yes, all quite true as it turned out. Dirk, at the start of his fairly lengthy post, also said no one's picked up on the story that the South African World Cup has more than 1 million tickets unsold. And he...
The old people have picked up on that.
Has he not read Andrew Jennings and we've done some stuff?
Where have you been, Dirk? He reckons Ghana would have been a better country than South Africa and safer too. Matt, how are things going ahead of the World Cup? Yeah, I ask you because you're our digger.
Well, not very well by all accounts, but we'll see. I mean, there were an awful lot of unsold tickets in Beijing, and it reflected very badly on the regime. But I would expect FIFA to, in order to massage its own image, to bus in a lot of people for nothing, and it's going to make the problem is not the unsold seats, because I'm sure the seats will be filled, and it will mean that there's more accessible viewing for the local South African public. So actually, it's probably quite a good thing.
Yeah.
But what it does mean is that the FIFA only have one chance, one shot every 4 years at making any money for to distribute across world football. And the way that if they're not making that money in the World Cup, then they're at best going to break even. And then it's going to be a problem for world football.
Right, okay. One or two other little posts. Happy Goth, thanks for your Scunthorpe update. Molto Benny, does Craig Gordon look like the late Ian Curtis or what? Yeah. Reading Rich says, very interesting discussion on the ethics of walking out on your team. You need to ride the bad times because then the good times are even more enjoyable. Matt.
Alex Ferguson shook someone's hand as they left last night. I was absolutely gobsmacked.
Who was that?
It was one of the fans streaming out. There's me. I am a religious evangelical about staying in my seat.
Because I thought it was somebody who was leaving from pitch side.
No, I think it was one of the fans who streamed it. Perhaps I've got that wrong, but all I saw was a hand thrust out, and there were an awful lot of other hands on the banister.
And I thought it was an astonishingly brave thing to do, because this was about 3-4 minutes before the end of the game. Ferguson staring European exit in the face, and this bloke walks by and goes, cheers, Sir Alex.
Yeah, I'm off, Alex. You know, I've seen enough of this rubbish, and I tell you, people who leave early.
Man United are at Blackburn this weekend, Sean.
Well, that's quite an interesting game.
They can go back on the top of the table.
They can do. United have only won 2 of the last 8 games at Ewood Park. They're going to be without Wayne Rooney. Blackburn have won 9 and drawn 5 of their 16 home games. And yet United are 1-2 on with the bookmakers, which I think is a crazy, crazy price. United might well win. But this is the obligatory betting angle. I would not be backing, I would not be putting £20 on to win a tenner.
Right. Their chance, though, United to put a really rotten week behind them. And, the bookies think they will. However, the focus this weekend has to be on the FA Cup and the semi-finals. Portsmouth against Spurs, for example. Portsmouth, who've never managed to beat Spurs since Harry Redknapp made that trip up the M22, would it? A3, that's the one. And they've only won one game.
That might be why, because they're still on the M22. Where's that White Hart Lane? I'm sure it's around here somewhere.
No, I'm sure they're better informed than I am. But anyway, Pompey have only had one victory in their last 6 games. But, if anything is going to fire them up, brave chaps that they are, it's this, isn't it, Paolo?
Yeah, you'd imagine so. I mean, they've not got a lot left to play for in the league. And I suppose there's also the desire to get one over on Harry, possibly, having some part in putting them in their current situation.
Says he didn't, incidentally, for the record.
He does that all, I'm sure in his press conference, ahead of this game, he will repeat those same things that, and he'll make the point that a lot of players he brought in were then sold on for a profit or a reasonable sum. But it is amazing, though, to look at that Portsmouth team. It's less than 2 years ago they win the FA Cup final and how they are now. And they could well be
the Jimbo of football, aren't they? I was on 2 years ago.
Isn't it lucky that Sasha Gaidamak was the owner of Portsmouth Football Club and not his father, Arkady Gaidamak, the convicted money launderer, who probably would not be a fit and proper person to run a Premier League football club. So, fortunately, Sasha Gaidamak proved too big.
That's fortunate indeed. Aaron Lennon back to full training. May make the squad.
Yeah, I think that's big for Tottenham. Aaron Lennon and Jermaine Defoe obviously coming off the bench at the weekend. I think that's, a huge team. Both players of huge importance to them as for this game and obviously the next few games. I think it's in a row they've got United, Chelsea and Arsenal, haven't they?
The cup semi, then Arsenal at home, then Chelsea at home, then United away.
Yeah,
What about Villa and Chelsea? Now, Chelsea, of course, on fire since their little blip against Inter and Blackburn. 3 wins on the bounce. They've scored 14 goals. And, of course, Villa know all about that because 7 of them were against the villains themselves. Is it going to be revenge for Martin O'Neill's men?
Well, Palace in 1990, having been thumped by Liverpool early in the season, 9-0, came back and won the semi-final, one of the great FA Cup semi-finals. So it's not impossible. You would say the way Chelsea are playing at the moment, they're obviously
Alan Pardew?
They have Martin O'Neill. Alan Pardew's a strange man, but anyway.
I meant as a player rather than as a manager. Yes, he really is.
Very strange.
Why?
He puts all the motivational slogans up on his dressing rooms for one. He's very Alan Partridge-like.
Helenio Herrera.
Most important thing is that it's all about Alan Partridge without him being Jose Mourinho. So,
he's very Alan Partridge.
He's awful. Awful man.
And what kind of motivational slogan does he put on the wall?
It's something like, 62% of crosses equals 1.8% greater chances of goals. Be the person you've always wanted to be.
Right.
Army
posters or whatever.
Well, no, but it's all that kind of Anthony Robbins, the US motivational speech.
Oh, right,
okay. We need to be a bit careful here because The Guardian is dotted with big signs saying educate and inspire all around it. So,
Well, Alan's been around, didn't you see him? He was around here last week.
And that then brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. What a rip-roaring ride through the week's events it's been. We'll be back on Monday, fresh and ready, to discuss all the latest news from the weekend. So do join us for that. In the meantime, Sean, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
Matt, Scott, what a performance from you.
Enormous
in a very nice
thank
way
you.
And Paolo Bandini,
cheers,
thanks to you as well. Get some sleep.
Can I just say? Can yeah. I just say that, yep. that when I said about Sean's funniest thing he's ever said, Sean is a very not Sean. Beg your pardon, Sid.
Sid
Lowe. A very funny man, and right. that was just particularly funny
if,
to me.
Sid did actually post that on his Twitter account earlier, yeah. and within a minute, someone replied to him, going, "Actually, they do. It's Sean."
No,
with total. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. It's one of the favourite things I've seen on Twitter
media.
Ever. Yeah,
that's even funnier, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. All right then. Many thanks to all concerned. We'll be back on Monday. Bye-bye.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.